And welcome, welcome, welcome to this... is it Tuesday? Well, yeah, to this Tuesday edition of your Business and Economic Zone. Guys, I have to apologize. It has been a bit of a long day. But nonetheless, we find ourselves still here within a good opportunity in terms of some great information sharing to take place. Now, on today's session, guys, after where I ended off with last night's discussion with regards to the home loan discussion, in terms of, you know, the $116 billion being channeled into our economy through loans itself. But tonight's discussion, I'm gonna factor in a global perspective with regards to how the global economy could be looking like and what we can be expecting for the rest of this year. Now, we are in month 9 for sure, but so far 2022 has not been anyone's cup of tea nor anyone's walk in the park, because there has been a lot of alarming signals coming from all around the world with regards to what are the various pressures on the global economy. Now, recently, about 12 days ago, the world-famous economist, Mr. Jeffrey Sachs, who is a researcher and also an economic advisor to various governments and various international bodies, which includes none other than the World Bank, the IMF, the EU itself, other central banks, and also various governments or leading governments from the developed world, with regards to policy and also how to take on various challenges itself. Now, if you don't know who Mr. Jeffrey Sachs is, just to give you a little bit of an overview of himself, he is an economist, an academic, a public policy analyst, and a former director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University, where he also holds the title of a university professor. Now, currently, he is working with a different research institute that takes a look at the global economy, as well as also the economic and political policies that influence it. However, recently, 12 days ago, and this is one of the reasons I'm bringing you this discussion, although it is in snippets, we are going to analyze each of these snippets intermittently. So, unfortunately, if any of you as listeners wanted to be part or provide any contributions, I'll have to have that or save that up for tomorrow evening so that you can have the opportunity to do so. But it's pretty short. It's 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and then 6 minutes. Those are the contributions from Mr. Jeffrey Sachs in this conversation that he had with the Prague Finance Institute, or the Prague Institute of Finance. Now, the main discussion, guys, was all about the global economy and where and what is going to be the situation heading into the rest of this year. Now, before the ad break catches up with me at 6:45, let's have a listen firstly on Mr. Jeffrey Sachs on what the future looks like for the global economy. Have a listen to this.
Now, we're definitely in rough waters. We're in a crisis. The crisis will get worse in the coming months, and it could get far worse. We're experiencing stagflation, meaning that there are rising prices at the same time that output is falling in many parts of the world. Europe is already in a downturn. The United States is entering a downturn. China is in some kind of economic downturn. So this is a global economic crisis. And so I regard the overall economic situation as bad as I've seen in decades, worse than in 2008. We're likely to experience some very significant shocks in the months ahead. Of course, the most crucial question is what happens to geopolitics? Does war spread? Does it intensify? Does it diminish? Is there a return to the negotiating table? Do the U.S. and China come to blows, which would disrupt global society? Do they find a way to talk with each other? These are the questions that we're facing right
now. That question itself that Mr. Sachs answered right there had to take a look at what does the scenario look like in the next months or leading into the next 24 months. He worked it out on a 24-month period. Now, the full discussion, just to give you insight, once again, can be found on YouTube on the Prague Institute of Finance's page itself. And this is an insightful discussion, just about 24 minutes long. And the entirety of it had to take a look at how bad is the situation going to go. You heard it right there. How bad is the situation going to become? Now, the unfortunate scenario is, and these have been some of the predictions coming from around the world, and I'm signaling towards one key important one, because back in, I think it was April, back in March, one of the world's biggest investment banks, actually it's one of the world's biggest retail banks, but one of the world, and it also has a very big investment arm, not as big as some of the other investment organizations in the world. This is now Germany's own Deutsche Bank, where Deutsche Bank was actually one of the most honest in its anticipations as well as also its predictions of the global economy, indicating towards the United States economy heading into a recession. Now, the fears, obviously, or the alarm bells, obviously, rang everywhere around the world. This being, yes, I've got the article open up here in front of me. On 26 April, Deutsche Bank, actually just prior before that, Deutsche Bank is forecasting and anticipating a United States recession. And a big one at that. They're not saying it's a small one. They're just saying a major recession is coming. Deutsche Bank warns. Now, this article from CNN on 26 April highlights the concerns. Now, Deutsche Bank raised eyebrows in April by becoming the first major bank to forecast a United States recession. Now, it's key here to understand, guys, why the fear of a US recession is bad for everyone around the world. It impacts the various institutions that we know of that we also look towards for some form of support, i.e. the World Bank and the IMF, as well as also other bodies, for example, like the European Investment Bank, as well as also China, because China is the only country that has that owns the largest portion of American debt. If anyone had debt bigger than any individual country had debt, the Chinese are actually the biggest owner of American debt. Second onto that is also that the Chinese have the world's largest US dollar foreign reserves, or their foreign reserve is predominantly US dollar based. It's one of the major concerns wherein the Americans were concerned about the Chinese currency manipulation, especially of their currency, the yuan, in relation to the US dollar. It will also help you understand why everyone at the UN said no to the Chinese yuan becoming an international currency. Meaning, an international currency means that you can actually pay for services, goods, import items, import various things with the Chinese yuan, which would make it easier for the yuan for you to import from China even, and vice versa for someone in China to import from Namibia, because you can pay in yuan. And yuan is almost like 2 Namibian dollars for 1 yuan. It's less than 5 Namibian dollars, the current rate, the current exchange rate. Now, the second thing had been, this obviously was a development that happened last year with regards to that. And the scenario currently happening is we've all heard of some of the stumbling blocks taking place in the Chinese economy with the Chinese Communist Central Party, issuing various economic policies with regards to economic reform taking place in the Chinese economy. One of them, a handful of them, took a look at the various tech companies, because China itself also has a tech, a very vibrant and robust tech industry. They took a look at the tech industry or the tech economy, as well as also other other sectors in the economy that they felt should need further reform in terms of policies being issued. And then there's also the scenario of the biggest financial crisis that the Chinese property market has been experiencing, coming in the form of Evergrande, the biggest, or China's biggest property developer and property company. But that's a scenario on China. Mr. Sachs was speaking about a scenario that impacts the whole world. Now, before I continue, we're quickly going to step into a short ad break, come back from that ad break and get into the next in terms of our bits, having a look at some of these key inputs and key insights coming from Mr. Jeffrey Sachs, the world-famous international economist. Stay tuned here on your number one talk radio station, and this is your Business and Economic Zone, where we actually taking a different look with regards to the international landscape.
Kukuruka na yowamba, kukuningisa ozere, nukuse spika na mpito domgara mokagura mkisigemeke. Ramangako, uwera o HIV. Ayo, kukupopera, tani kuiruga na maokoko. Tokora sigara, ninkawa kurugana yowamba. Mokutura mwe hundiro liye yowamba zuma okoko, zimo guanakuma pukuru gomanzi. Tumako WhatsApp kwa numero 0833-3858-2. Ndidingura kwa Facebook kwa VMMC Namibia.
Now we come back, and just where we left off was just that little bit of scenario in terms of taking a look at the global economy. Now, clearly, the much of the consternation in the global economy is still on about the Ukraine conflict. Now, I as much as I would like to steer away from the Ukraine conflict, guys, we have to acknowledge that it is actually the current inflammatory or very inflaming event, or inflammatory event currently in the global geopolitical space, because it is creating so much deviations and so many disturbances for all of us. For all of us. Now, much of it has been the misrepresentation, as well as also the lack of foresight from especially the Western countries, i.e. those in NATO and those in the EU, who anticipated this Ukraine conflict to be only a month long. Look, guys, for you to see the impacts here in Namibia on the ground, the unfortunate scenario is the only thing we can see it in is through our petrol price moves. Now, this morning's discussions with regards to the petrol price being reduced twice after each other, obviously still taking into account the aspect of certain levies and tariffs also slightly being suspended, because MVA themselves indicated, you know, a notion in terms of how we can suspend their contributions. That comes from their own words. However, the Ministry of Mines and Energy also indicated that a recalculation or an adjustment in terms of how this, the overall retail price that you and I see at the petrol pump, was adjusted in order to have a different perspective towards what can be informed. Because here's the unfortunate scenario. It will become highly unsustainable by the end of this year if the petrol price continue, or the fuel price at the petrol station continues to increase. It will become highly unsustainable. Highly unsustainable. Now, taking another look, and this at this stage, I'm heading back to Mr. Sachs in terms of his contribution. Taking another look in terms of the global debt scenario. Now, the global debt scenario is a good indication in terms of where we are going. Remember, this is all about seeing what is the scenario, what is the current status of things, and what is the current global debt scenario, and what's happening there. Let's have a listen to Mr. Sachs when he had to answer this question with regards to the global debt, because even the interviewer himself the guy from the Prague Institute of Finance indicated that the global debt picture just has too many zeros on it. He won't even try and estimate it because it's just too big. Let's have a listen in terms of what the scenario is there. Because here's the thing. Global debt is where we as a country also have been participating in. Yes, we've also been participating in a global debt scenario. But let's have a listen to what Mr. Sachs said.
Zeros. So what's the solution to that so it doesn't threaten the world's global financial system and stability?
It's a great question. Again, in the last stagflation that we had in the late 1970s, what happened was that the inflation in the United States reached around 10% per year, and the Fed, under a 6'7", a 2-meter chairman of the Fed, Paul Volcker, cigar-smoking, tough guy, he said, we're going to end this inflation, and he put interest rates up to 20%, and by the time it was over, all the developing countries were bankrupt. It was unbelievable. Well, it made my career because I spent the next decade helping countries get out of debt crisis, which had laid them completely flat. So if we go into this just with the naive financial squeeze right now, we'll end up with a lot of carnage, meaning a lot of countries in default, a lot of very high inflation rates. You look at a country like Turkey now, they have not managed their economy properly for years, but the inflation rate is reaching 100% per year right now. Argentina, the inflation rate is reaching 100%. There will be other countries experiencing this kind of runaway inflation. Maybe Ukraine is going to have a hyperinflation by the end of.
Now, it's key to factor in there because everyone seems to be borrowing from the same sources. These sources are the IMF. These sources are the World Bank. Institutions that are aligned with the United Nations or affiliated in one or other way to the United Nations. But the unfortunate scenario has been that they are breaking points. There are breaking points. Now, before I reach the top of the hour at 7 o'clock, the key points here have been that there is a lot of fires burning all around the world. The biggest one of them so far have been Sri Lanka. Now, Sri Lanka's scenario actually is born directly out of the Ukraine conflict. They could not afford. They're an island nation. An island nation. Island nations have it difficult. Because island nations are notoriously known for not having much resources. And I'm talking about natural resources. This has actually led to a change of government in their country. This has actually led to a political crisis being created right there. The second one happening currently right now, it actually has a twofold of various crises taking place. The unfortunate scenario is that it's one, it is political. The second one, it is a natural one. And this is the country of Pakistan. The country of Pakistan, unfortunately, is a ticking time bomb and also second to follow after Sri Lanka. Now, what a lot of international media outlets will not tell you is that you see a sort of like, it's almost like a pressure point being reached in a whole host of these developing countries because Sri Lanka is not, they're not in the developed world. They are like us in the developing bracket. The unfortunate scenario is that Sri Lanka had to experience a protracted sort of like political standoff taking place. Now, Pakistan, on the other hand, Pakistan has been notoriously known for being governed by the military, by the army. The unfortunate scenario there is that the pressures coming through have now been amplified both in the political space and both by the floods that are causing a human, that's actually contributing towards a human catastrophe on the other end, i.e. the loss of life being in the, having reached the 1,300 mark because of the floods that they just experienced now 2 weeks back. Now, the floods are born out of a whole month of rainfall that Pakistan had received. And because of poor infrastructure and also the lack of investment in infrastructure in that country, this has led to the floods still persisting, with water still standing, with a potential for diseases and illnesses to spring about, as well as also the potential for a famine to come about. Now, what Mr. Sachs is pointing towards there is that it is pointing towards a ticking time bomb scenario. A ticking time bomb scenario in the case of where, unfortunately, if you have to look at a country like Ukraine, once again, they are just being given money. They are just being donated money to fight a war and weapons as well. Now, this is all artificial because they would then still also, if everything ends, this conflict, they will still have to fix things. Meaning that will be still before they, that will be a whole period before they are actually back to being productive. The second component onto that is also other countries that are experiencing increased rates of inflation. Now, this sees Turkey. He mentioned Turkey. Turkey being one of them, one of these examples. But the unfortunate scenario being that Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the president of Turkey, has fired every central bank governor that he has appointed who wants to provide a solution that is alternative to the belief or the solution that Erdogan is supplying. Now, this has led to mass sort of like local disbelief, as well as also, that's now in Turkey, as well as also consumer sentiment being at its lowest with regards to the policies that every new central bank governor in Turkey is initiating or bringing in, because it just looks towards further inflation, further devaluation of the Turkish lira, as well as also making life very hard and difficult for Turks in their country with regards to the economic policies that are being meted out. Now, it brings us to the top of the hour with that short discussion, and we'll quickly be stepping into a short ad break. Do stay tuned for the rest of tonight's program to follow on just after this short or extended break. It's actually an extended break, wherein we will be ending it off with the Mr. Sachs's next contribution, which is a good 6 minutes one, having to take a look at financing for the world. This is now in terms of providing a solution. It's a good 6 minutes just to get in terms of an understanding with regards to how this looks, what could be the possible solution out there. And on that note, stay tuned here on your number one talk radio station. We're quickly stepping into that short break. And right after this, we'll be coming right back. And as mentioned, guys, unfortunately, no calls for tonight. We will be dealing exclusively in this information coming from international, the world-renowned economist, Mr. Jeffrey Sachs. Have a listen.
The International University of Management, IUM, with the Umbo no number no wish we faguja, Omanjirongo or Durataya Academic Year 2023, Ukapatruka, and the Rapa if you record a paparoe, more education, Ukarolong if you got it, Ufe or Health and Social Science, or show my fano information and communication technology, or strategic management and leadership, na taimonika no tourism, or show hospitality and event management, business administration, ikuterera, environmental studies and postgraduate studies at Shota de Monica. Where are they? Monica ko website www.ium.edu.na. ile utalere pembe roda IUM kuri popepi mo venduka monkure nguru mongwe diva no mompae utadimonika wirero to hange kongo ti ya venduka 061 ongo di ne natunatu oma vedi hamano inda komesho kufeto korori rimonjira toiko mona kuiwa inerao pamwe na IUM.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Hello, Namibia. Welcome to the world of Lela Pay. Lela Pay is an easy-to-use payment and booking mobile app that allows you to send out classified adverts or messages to your consumers and have them published in real time. What can you do on Lela Pay? Place classified adverts and messages on the Eagle FM app, Inba app, Lela Pay app, and place adverts in the Villager and many more vendors. You can also make payments. One can place messages of any events, including promotion, invitations, birthday wishes, funeral notices, and any announcement you wish to announce on a national level, starting from $3.50 per message. So, how does it work? Download Lela Pay app and open the app. Step one, register.
Now, we come back from the extended break right there, and where we left off was having a listen to the next discussion from Mr. Sachs, as well as also the interviewer from the Prague Institute of Finance, just to listen on, you know, what could be the possibility for financing for the whole world's global debt problem, and also the threats and pressures that the world is facing. So, you might be asking, yes, but how would this work? Now, Mr. Sachs himself has been known, Jeffrey Sachs has been known for actually being someone that, you know, doesn't believe in just merely printing money, because this has been an accusation by the BRICS countries towards the various developed countries, especially the United States, the European Central Bank, as well as also the UK's Bank of England, because in most cases, they leverage the value of the economies on the value of the various economies around the world. Now, if you had to look at that system, it does point towards a very fragile ecosystem, economic ecosystem, as well as also an ecosystem that presents a lot of troubles and a lot of problems. Now, on that, this is what Mr. Sachs had to add to this question on financing for the world.
We don't know.
But unlike 30 years ago or 40 years ago, actually, well, almost 50 to be exact,
yeah.
Is the developed world, are the developed economies and their financial system insulated from this impact that could be coming again from emerging markets or developing economies?
It's interesting. You know, of course, in the 2010s, because the European Central Bank did not do a very good job under its president, Trichet, in the early years of the last decade, Greece nearly went bankrupt. It wasn't so far for Ireland, Spain, Portugal, and even Italy.
And Slovenia.
So the Eurozone and Slovenia, the Eurozone almost collapsed. It required Draghi's deft hand to prevent that collapse. Basically, the European Central Bank had to act as a lender of last resort to prevent a disaster. So central banks and their wisdom or lack of wisdom will determine a lot. In 2008, the Fed and the U.S. Treasury stupidly drove Lehman Brothers into a bankruptcy one weekend in September 2008, and it cost the whole world trillions of dollars, that technical mistake that they made. And so when you're in a crisis, the first thing to say is these institutions are not so reliable. They're not so smart. They're not so foolproof that they necessarily avoid real damage. What we need to come to the positive answer to your question is we need to avoid a contagion of defaults and a contagion of insolvencies. And we also need to avoid simply telling dozens of countries, you need to contract sharply your public investment and your social spending and so forth.
So you effectively coming full circle from what, you know, being the sort of a from professing shock therapies, you are coming full circle into actually going against these sort of fiscal cuts in the country.
No. Remember when I was advocating shock therapy, I was advocating that governments not print money or issue money in order to finance budget deficits. But I was constantly recommending that the international finance help the countries to avoid defaults or crises. One of the key pillars of shock therapy in Bolivia and Poland, for example, was a cancellation of the debts of those countries, the foreign debts. So I argued that to pay the foreign debts in Bolivia would have condemned the country to a rampant hyperinflation. And in the end, Bolivia's external debt to international banks was cut by about 90% at my recommendation. Similarly, in Poland, in that shock therapy, I recommended that Poland's debt overhang should be relieved, the debt that Poland owed, especially to its official creditors, should be cut very, very sharply. And that indeed happened. So I did not recommend simply austerity and contraction. I recommended always that the international counterparts, the creditors, play a role, a constructive role, a positive role in preventing crisis in debtor countries.
And in debt relief, regardless the potential risk of moral hazard in
Well, debt relief depends on the circumstances. In the circumstances today, I'm not recommending cancellation of the face value of debts. What I am recommending is that one way or another, and it depends very much on the specific circumstances, that countries get the kinds of development finance that they need, even on a larger scale than now. And I'm talking about new debts on a long-term, low interest rate basis, so that these countries can continue to develop without going into default today. It's a tricky proposition for countries that have borrowed on the Eurobond market, governments that owe money right now. It may be that they have to say to the creditors, well, we need to extend the horizon for repayment under certain kinds of contracts where there are collective action clauses. This can be done fairly smoothly. And probably many countries are going to have to take that chance. When it comes to official credits that a government owes to a rich country government or to the World Bank or to some other international institution, I'm recommending a set of measures to make sure that the developing countries are getting more finance in fresh form than they are repaying on old debts. There are many ways to do that, but I'm basically saying don't print money. I've never believed in that because you just get high inflation. But rather, let's get a financial solution.
Now, that obviously speaks towards, you know, possibilities of trying to weather a storm going ahead. At the second part of that discussion, you could hear or you heard the, in terms of, you know, the possibility of cutting debts for developing countries, wherein we find ourselves because we are a developing country. But the scenario could not be more precarious than what it actually sounds. You see, the case with Mr. Sachs is that he is an independent economist, not aligned with any of the major role-playing stakeholders in the global economy, or even though he has advised, or he does advise, various countries on the economic policies, as well as also socio-economic and also geopolitical directions to take in order for the greater good of everyone. However, the aspect of cutting debts does create a very precarious relationship going ahead. Why? Because as you and I know, the person that has or is in charge of the debt that you owe, you as a country, us as a country, would then, if there has to be a new debt deal, would then indicate to us, listen, this is going to be the new terms and conditions. Even though he says it has to be a low interest rate, it can either mean something else, or it could include various kinds of conditions that we would not be comfortable with. Now, I speak on this regard because on the continental space, however, we as the continent, we are trying to reach a new direction, trying to capitalize on the prospect of the Africa Free Trade Agreement. I mean, just last week. Or the week before, I was at the unveiling the UN, one other UN agency, but the unveiling of, you know, the opportunity for Namibian entrepreneurs to get onto the continental platform. And this is also one of the biggest drives that even the UN itself on the continent has been promoting, facilitating, and also trying to get this Africa Free Trade Agreement discussion rolling for the continent. This has led to benefits, for example, us making contact or actually delivering in a first consignment of exports, of beef exports or meat exports to Ghana, which is a bonus. In that same breath, it also looks promising because this then sees new bilateral or multilateral connections being developed between countries, even from the SADC region to countries of just from either from the ECOWAS region or from the Eastern, you know, the what's the other one's name? The region from Eastern Africa that includes Kenya's block of countries, and then potentially having to unlock us or put possibilities into North Africa as well. But, and I say this with a strong but, each country on this continent is a sovereign state with its own commitments internationally as well. Because we still have scenarios of conflict on the continent. Ethiopia is one, is still a talking point. Somalia is unfortunately still suffering from various natural disasters that is actually a prolonged drought in itself. The second one is a possibility of a further inflammation of conflict between Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan because of the dam that Ethiopia decided to build and construct on the Blue Nile, which is one of the two main contributing channels of the River Nile itself. I mean, three countries are dependent upon that water. The second scenario is, or not the second scenario, the further scenarios to factor in is that here in the ECOWAS region or in Western and the Western African region, there is some form of geopolitical instability manifesting there. That's now all the way from Mali into Senegal, into Burkina Faso as well. And these countries have tight bonds or close bonds, especially with France itself. Togo is in there as well. You still have to factor in Cameroon. You still have to factor in the current situation in DRC, where a lot of inhabitants or citizens of DRC are unhappy at the United Nations peacekeeping mission there, which has actually seen some violence occurring there against the UN peacekeepers. And the scenario is not stable at best. You know, when people say critical but stable, it's not stable. It's definitely not a stable scenario in terms of looking at a geopolitical perspective. Now, excessively high debt levels for any country is damaging. And there's a myriad, meaning many reasons why excessively high debt levels are a problem. Look, guys, one of the basic understanding with regarding high debt levels for a country is that it puts investment into your own economy under strain. It puts it under pressure. But before I continue, we're quickly heading into a short ad break. And from the ad break, we're going to be coming right back after this.
Paratus Mobile LTE. Everything you want, whenever you want it. Start uploading, downloading, liking, and sharing all your experiences with the world. Starting from 345 Namibian dollars per month, excluding VAT for postpaid. Get online with high-speed internet the way you want it. Visit paratus.africa/NA for more information. Always prepare.
Paratus. Coming back from that quick break, the notion here is that economic vitality with regards to excessive high debt levels that any country can experience is that it threatens economic vitality. Secondly, it places a strain on any country's budget allocations that have to take place. This is important to understand because, well, if there is a strain on a country's budget, that means a country cannot invest in its country or in its citizens as actively as it wants to. Now, it's key to note here, guys, that the reason economies move on is because there are the momentum of money moving in the system is continuous. It continues to work, it continues to function, it continues to flow. Now, the threats of cutting or for debt to being cut. Now, I'm just giving you the scenario of excessive high debts, but if these debts are cut, and as I mentioned just before the ad break, before the short little discussion, the short little segment where I indicated, right after, just before the break in terms of where we left off, is it changes the manner in which international organizations and institutions look at your country. I gave you the scenario of the continent not looking as stable as we would like it to be, because everyone is now trying to get the Africa Free Trade Agreement rolling. Everyone is trying to get it going. Everyone is trying to make this new idea of getting the continent connected to actually function. Well, Namibia has, we've done our part so far. We've gone into business with a fellow African country, Ghana. We are already in business with other fellow African countries, but that's predominantly in the SADC region. Also, second onto that is the one article that I saw earlier today in one of Namibia's dailies, having a look at where Namibia and Botswana are actually trying to make goods, services, and people move a lot quicker by trying to develop a one-stop border post. Now, that is good because that means processing can be quicker. It can flow quicker. You know, that looks towards trade actually being sped up. People and skills and tourism moving a lot, flowing a lot, yeah, not moving, flowing a lot better, you know, a lot more fluid. Thus leading to, you know, quick accessibility of, you know, people and goods and services through that border post. But this is just, you know, these are like building blocks or baby steps that we are seeing taking place. Because ultimately, if you had to look at the international platform, it makes it look like a very scary place, which it actually is. It looks like a very scary place. And that would actually explain to us, the rest on the continent, let's rather work with each other. I mean, the Ukraine conflict is in month six. Yeah, it's in month six, eh? We're in September. It's heading into month six of the conflict. The estimates out there from the various NATO member countries was, yeah, it'll be over and done within a month. We're in month six. We're going to end 2022 with that conflict still ongoing, with pressures on various commodities and items that have assisted the whole developing world still being in place, with oil still impacting everyone's economies. Now, it's key to note here, guys, that Jeffrey Sachs is but one voice out there. He's not a voice aligned to a government, which is good, because he was also the same guy at last year's, just before the COP26, there was like a global climate summit between the G20 or the G7 and various other developing world. I think the AU was there. The AU was there present, not anyone individually, but he was the guy that spoke actively about. When are the commitments for the global climate program to combat global climate change, to combat the impacts of the global climate concerns, to combat these? When are they going to be enacted? When are they going to be instituted? When is the money going to be allocated to combat the oncoming climate challenges that we will all experience as the whole world? Now, this has seen major developments taking place. For example, the whole developed world being preoccupied with the Ukraine conflict for some reason. Second on that is also wherein the developed countries are actually not living by the same commitments that they want everyone to sign on to. What does that mean? Reversals in various climate action policies are coming especially from the European Union countries, these being Germany, Poland. Poland is actually known as one of the world's largest producing coal-producing countries. And Poland is also one of the biggest contributors to carbon emissions, which is actually creating an unstable climate scenario for all of us. And I just explained to you one country, that being Pakistan. The US, the United States is also experiencing very, very unpredictable weather patterns. For example, the state of Texas is now being flooded. The state of Texas is being flooded. The state of California is still experiencing a drought spell, as well as also extended extreme weather patterns. This has then cascaded over into the next state of the United States, that being the state of Nevada, wherein the city of Las Vegas, yes, Las Vegas, the spectacle, the gambling spectacle of North America, might have to ration its water usage because it is a major tourist spot. Now I'm describing to you the climate impacts. What about Europe? Europe is experiencing dry rivers. The major river networks of Europe has decreased levels, or let's call it their water levels, are so low they've had to suspend agricultural activities. Now, as you know, and as I know, in Namibia, if you just had to look at that, Namibia, agriculture is one of the key sectors of our economy as a country of Namibia. Even though agriculture itself has not evolved into the behemoth industry or sector it should be, like you can find it in any other country. But countries who have well-advanced, well-established, well-supported agricultural industries, and that being in the first world or in the developed countries, unfortunately will see shortages, or it can experience shortages in the next 6 months with regards to grain and crops, which will once again lead to further shortages and also supply chain constraints for the rest of the world. If countries like Italy, Germany, France, Spain, they have wasted harvests, guys. This will lead to further pressures on the global supply chain for agricultural production. And there's only so far that countries like Australia, Brazil, Argentina, South Africa can produce. There's only so much they can produce. Now, the scenario here is we won't only be seeing pressures in the next coming months on the petrol price. I'm now back on the Namibian platform. We won't just be seeing pressures on petrol price anymore. We will now start seeing real impacts with regards to supply chain scenarios. Supply chain scenarios being, if you now have to factor in where the extra wheat or the extra barley or the extra grain has to come from. And if anyone comes and tells me that, yeah, we need to upscale or upskill or invest more in our green schemes, the unfortunate thing is, what's the timeline you're going to look at? Because that red locust is still here in our country. So the prospect of looking towards a diminished harvest, if we have to, try and go full scale in trying to be self-sufficient, the situation is that we still have natural threats towards any kind of grain, if we try to grow grain itself, that exists, and it's pretty difficult to mitigate it, or the threats of these natural threats. For example, that red locust swarm or pestilence that exists. An insect that migrated from as far as Somalia and Ethiopia, it migrated all the way down to Namibia. Now, if you don't know what a climate change phenomenon looks like, that is one right there. Yes, guys, you can Google it. Google is everyone's best friend. It's a human right. It's a basic human right. You can just Google, where does that red locust come from? The African red locust. Where does it come from? It's an insect that comes from way there above Kenya, East Africa. It comes from there above Kenya. Now, the unfortunate thing is, we don't know how clear the picture is going to be. Even though Mr. Sachs indicated towards, troubling waters or a troubling global scenario ahead, we don't know how troubling it looks like. Meaning in terms of the clarity of the picture, the clarity of the looming global economic disaster. If it is a disaster. Well, he used the words crisis and disaster and the threats to the global economy. But we don't know how clear it is. We just go by what his estimations have been, as well as also his interactions. Now, another part of that interview that took place, which I didn't use, was one that actually helps to explain the global geopolitical standoff that is currently going on. You see, even though we have slightly, not deviated, but have not spoken about the current developments internationally with regards to where the world finds itself in terms of everyone's involvement or everyone's feelings towards each other with regards to the Ukraine conflict, is that unfortunately, guys, Jeffrey Sachs indicated there that he has spoken. He has spoken to the Chinese, to the Russians, and to the United States with regards to the Ukraine conflict. And unfortunately, he says the only guys that aren't willing to listen are the Americans. It's his own words. It's in that interview, if you don't believe me, it's in that interview. He says the only people that are not willing to listen on trying to find a solution for the world are the Americans. Now that brings us up to the end of tonight's program here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. This has been your Business and Economic Zone. Do stay tuned for the rest of your programming to follow on after this. And also catch me again tomorrow morning as we will be going through the very early session in terms of the programs to follow. On that note, do enjoy the rest of your evening here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM.
Hello, Namibia. Welcome to the world of Lela Pay. Lela Pay is an easy-to-use payment and booking mobile app that allows you to send out classified adverts or messages to your consumers and have them published in real time.
So, jy het dit gedoen. Jy het jou laat besny.
Yep.
Dit was baie dapper. Was dit nie vrek seer nie?
Dit was net so effens seer, maar dis die moeite werd om myself teen seksueel oordraagbare infeksies te beskerm. En dis soveel makliker om skoon te hou.
Wel, as jy dit so stel, dan moet ek dit dalk ook laat doen.
Bra, dis die regte ding om te doen. Man Up, kry 'n besnyding. Om 'n gratis besnyding te bespreek of om meer uit te vind, stuur 'n WhatsApp boodskap na 081-309-2729 of besoek ons Facebookblad by VMMC Namibia.
Speak your mind while respecting the opinions of others.
How can you say Namibia was brought on a silver platter when so many people were massacred?
No, that's not what I mean. Mm-hmm. I mean on the silver platter
in terms of the infrastructure.
Of the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, there were schools, there were roads, there were...
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
To grab that victory against Ivory Coast will be a big one for us. It will be the first...
For social position to raise a child. What does that mean? Baby dumping.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
The commander say hold fire, they hold fire. When the commander says fire, they fire. You know, they are trained to kill. We are trained to arrest people and bring them before court.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
That's why some of us wear unbranded clothes. Because it's about selling their product.
So talk on Eagle FM. Eagle FM, the eye.